to know the artist behind the epic melodies, songs, and beats. Celebrating the best new music from around the world. This is the A State of Trance Podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Ronde and this is a new A State of Trance Podcast. And we have someone in the studio that I've known for many years, I think 2 decades already. But he made his debut in the studio this week, Sean Tyas.
Oh man, you're making me feel old. But yeah, dude, it's great to be here with you today.
Not old.
Well, you said two decades always indicates a long passage of time.
Yeah.
But it did go really fast.
It's not really that. If you talk about 2 centuries, then it's long.
Yeah, it's
two
long.
Decades is not that long.
No, no.
To be honest.
Not to us. No,
no, not to us. When you're old, then it's not so much.
You're already there.
So we actually have a lot of questions that were submitted by fans. So we'll get to those. But I always, and I like to talk to a little bit of the timeline of your musical career. And I always love to know, where did everything start? Because it doesn't happen a lot that we have someone in the studio that was born and raised in the USA.
Fair enough.
Because it was very different. Because whenever I talk to people from Germany or something like that, or the UK, they always say, yeah, we grew up with the music, or we watched Viva, the TV, where we saw System F or something like that on TV. But you're from the US. So tell us, how did you fall in love with dance music? Or how did you discover dance music?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess it kind of came in line with, I mean, America always had an underground techno and rave scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, Detroit, Chicago, and that was, it was burgeoning back then. I had an uncle who, I guess at the time, was in his 20s. I was 10 years old. He flips me a mixtape that he had, or not even a mixtape, a single that he had brought back. And on that tape was a bunch of remixes of Apotheosis, O Fortuna.
Okay.
And all the mixes that were out, I think the year was 1990. That makes me 10 years old. And hearing this sound, hearing this environment of new audio in my headphones, because I was on a Sony Walkman with the orange pads, you know. And man, I made a new mixtape from that, because it was only 3 songs on each side. And I just put them on loop. And yeah, so I can listen to them over and over, and became obsessed. And then you go to a store, back a CD store back then, and you ask, where is more music like this? And they're like, oh yeah, in the techno section in the back. It was about 7 CDs in a little cubby.
That was the techno section.
And everything was techno. It wasn't what techno is now. It was everything bunched up. And then eventually that became called electronica, and it was all electronic dance music. And eventually, years down the line, it became more specialized.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to really search for it. It was not part of our culture.
Yeah. So your uncle brought home a single.
Yep.
And yep, that's how, and then you were hooked straight away.
Absolutely.
And what was the next step? You started to, because you became a dance music enthusiast, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
And then there's the next step. Then you get to the moment that you want to start creating music.
Yeah.
Or DJing music. What came first for you?
Definitely. I was going to school to become my dream was always to be an animator for either Disney or an anime company, do comic books. It was visual art was my obsession.
Drawing also.
Yeah, but okay. I would put music on in the background. It was always, and eventually just became all dance music that I would listen to as I was drawing. And eventually I said, okay, you know what? I want to make this too. I'm going to try it. I don't know. I know nothing about music and I sucked at playing musical instruments, but I'm like, let's try this. And because I was very good with electronics.
Yeah.
So yeah, got started with the demo scene and tracking, which is like, for those that know, MS-DOS based top down hexadecimal, hexadecimal based music making, which was not so practical. And I would never play it for anybody now. I wouldn't make them suffer through it, but it was the first taste. And of course came later Cubase, a more appropriate computer, my first synth. And then so-and-so the obsession began. And yeah, credit card companies, thrill as you start to go to these music stores and bring home $2,000 synths. Mom and Dad, look what I got.
Yeah, that's what you did. You bought expensive synths to make music.
To learn, yeah.
What was your first synth that you bought?
The first one I ever had was a Yamaha AN1X.
Mm-hmm.
And then started just expanding. I've had pretty much all the classic ones from like that late 90s, early noughties era with the Supernova 2 I still have. It's my third one. Nordlead 2, Waldorf Microwave XDK, mm-hmm, Access Virus Snow, all that stuff. But now I'm getting more into modular synthesis. So that's kind of my next
thing. Follow, we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah, for sure. Because I'm still following the timeline a little bit. Because like I said, you started buying synths.
Oh yeah.
You started making music. At what age did you start making music? Because you said you fell in love with music when you were 10.
Yep.
And then you started making music at what age?
took a really long time. When I got into the tracking scene, that was probably, I was probably 17.
Okay.
But it was like a goof with a couple of other friends that we would hand the tracking projects to each other with floppy disks and do like collabs that way.
Yeah.
And it was just a goofball thing. And then we would play them at house parties and was like, look what we made. It was total goof. No intention of making this a career. And then
you would play it from the fast tracker.
No, I would actually record it onto a cassette.
Okay.
Still viable means of transporting music.
Do you still have those?
Definitely not, but a friend of mine did keep the exports of those on WAV file. I need to go hit him up for that. It would be funny.
That would be so funny to listen to.
Yeah, I know.
No, I always say because...
it was mostly Gabber, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah?
It was terrifyingly hard, yeah.
Really hard and really fast.
Yeah. I was an angry teenager like you.
I always say, because when I listen to my own music from the past, I always say it sounds so bad and the ideas are so bad. But in the end, it defines you who you are right now. Because if you didn't make those tunes, then you wouldn't continue in what you were doing that you're doing right now.
I still hear ideas from, if I listen to a really old track of mine that was made 15 or 16 years ago, I can hear an idea that has evolved into something I'm doing in a better way now. But I'm happy I did it and tried back then.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, from 17 years old, you started with Fast Tracker and whatnot, or different tracker.
Fair enough.
And how long did it take you before you were at the point that you were like, okay, this is good enough to send to a label? That you were like, okay, this is actual music. This is good enough. I can send this off.
I was goofing around over the next couple of years from that point, from like 1998 into 2002. And eventually I sent a track into... a local radio station.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing this something called, it was 92.3, and this guy DJ Theo and Andre, they were running the only electronic music show on the entire Long Island in New York. And they did a 9 o'clock knockout where they would pit two songs together. And I think I was up against the Tiesto track, and it was people call in and vote which one they like better.
Yeah.
I just think I had the local support and I ended up beating out Tiesto for the 9 o'clock knockout.
No way.
Yeah. I don't think I deserved it, but.
Hey, it doesn't matter.
But yeah. So then you come back, your track comes back the following week for another 9 o'clock knockout and keep going ad nauseum. But eventually I got knocked out by a Daft Punk tune, which I think it was.
It's not bad.
No, I'll take that.
One more time or something.
It was like one more time.
Yeah. Oh, that's not so bad. Which track was it?
I'm not even saying, because then everyone's going to Google it, so I'm not saying it.
No, no one's listening.
It was really old. It was no one's listening. It was called Love at First Sight.
Yeah, that's actually your first release on Top House.
It was, yeah. Wow, very good. Very good. Yeah.
That's the one.
It was that. The label company got in touch with me based on that play. Well, those two plays, and then we went from there. So
it was actually a democratically chosen song because people were saying that it was good enough for the radio. So
kind of
the label was like, okay, that's easy. That's maybe how people are. A&Rs nowadays are signing as well based on TikTok and
people, you know, support. Yeah.
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 That's interesting.
That's true. That was the old school TikTok radio.
Well, yeah. It's basically, yes. around that time, because then you were 22 years old. Before that, was there already like an active trance or rave scene in New York?
Yes. In fact, we had some amazing clubs, from the years 1998 to, that's why, I mean, I started going to New York Manhattan clubbing when I was 16, which is like a no-go, but I had some friends that can get me in.
Yeah.
So it was like New York had super clubs. We had, if you go back, you had like Exit, and before Exit, it used to be Carbon, and we had the Tunnel. Tunnel was like a famous club from the 90s in New York into, I think it closed around 99 or 2000. Twilo, which was Paul Van Dyke's quoted favorite club he's ever played in his life. Roxy, that crowd eventually started going to Roxy. So many clubs. And I mean, Exit would hold 6,500 people without breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
And now the scene has just completely moved out of Manhattan and gone to Brooklyn. And it's very splintered out into smaller parties. So that scene is very much transformed. I do hope we get a day where an era where we can get back to the super club era. I had a good time.
Instead of all the festivals, I guess.
The festivals are cool too, but it just feels like you don't get to go. Yeah. I like being in a club with the full production of the lasers, the lights, the experience, the fact that you're out all night.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, taking a sidestep, of course, but the last few weeks I played headline shows in smaller clubs, smaller venues.
Yeah.
And I prefer those so much over festival sets where you just come in and play 1 hour, just smash everything out.
And you're so far away from the people.
You're far away from people, you can't connect. And if you're in a small club, you could touch hands with, you know, you can high five people if there's a big tune coming on.
I love that. I love the boiler room feel.
You can look people into their eyes.
Yep.
Yeah. As a DJ, you can react way better on that rather than standing on a festival with some big lights on your face.
Yeah, yeah. The boiler room feel is what I really like the most, yeah. Where people are surrounding you on all sides. They're close enough to literally stop your decks if they wanted to. Yeah. Let's hope they don't.
Steal your USB. That's what we had on the main stage of A State of Trance this year.
Really?
Yeah, we had a stage around us, basically. So you had people next to you, behind you.
So cool.
And playing there was much more fun than having just the screen behind you with some cool visuals.
And you're 10 to 20 meters away from the first human being in front of you. Yeah. Yeah.
So I hope we're going to keep that for a long time. All right. 2002, Love at First Sight. It was the first release decided by the people on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
After that, you started making more music, became more confident into making new songs, I guess. You teamed up, correct me if I'm wrong, with Beam for a couple of tunes. That was the next step in your career?
Nope, there was one step in the middle.
Okay.
I had linked up with, through that radio station, another guy named Seth Lawrence, who was working for Tommy Boy Silver, another New York
record. It's a major label.
It was a major label back then, absolutely. And he was able to provide a lot of other really interesting deals, like a remix of Pink, Get the Party Started, Daniel Bedingfield, and several others. And also during that time, there was a label called V2. I'm not even sure if they're still around in New York anymore, but they were handling the American releases from Moby.
Okay.
And me being the smart-ass 20-something kid, I went to the V2 office in Manhattan by train, handed them a demo disc, and I said, I want to remix the next Moby release. And they put me on that one. Yeah, so they let me do it. And the flip side was a Ferry Corson remix. I was out of my league, but still something kind of cool when you walk away from it. Yeah.
That's interesting. So you just walked out that office and you said, I want to remix songs.
And I left the CD and like unsolicited. That's like a no-no, right?
Well, I guess the same thing happens nowadays that people send you emails with, hey, I want to do this or this or that. But now you get so many of those emails, you don't make an impression, I guess.
Oh,
so whenever you go to an office, especially in the times where dance music wasn't that big in the US yet, you have this kid from New York knocking on your door, I want to do some remixes.
That's right. That's right. It's right now your email is just inundated with demos in bootleg remixes, whatever. Back then there weren't as many producers.
No, and right now if you would walk up to, let's say, Ultram or Insomniac, they wouldn't let you in. They would be like, okay, here's the email. You can send something to.
Absolutely.
And no one would listen to your stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
But that was a bold move though. Respect.
Figured, why not? I mean, Moby was one of my, of course, reasons to even start this. One of my biggest inspiring factors. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, V2? And V2's in Manhattan? I can take a train there in 45 minutes. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Then the next step was teaming up with Beam.
Yes.
Or Beam Tracks with a couple of releases. There was also still, where was that base, the Beam Tracks?
That was the bridge. Beam Tracks
to
was
Europe.
Based out of Cologne, Germany. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he discovered me through trans.new. God bless.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. But
it's still there. You can't log in anymore.
You just can't log in. But all the old posts are still there.
I think so. Yeah.
Pretty cool. Anybody that's new to the scene should go check it out. It's like a Bible of old discussions.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
I was on there every day.
Yeah.
That's where
you got news. That and Trans Addict was great. I did a couple of projects for him. And then eventually one morning I wake up and he's emailed me or MSN message. Remember that? And how would you feel about coming to Germany to work for me? And I said, I don't have a passport. He's like, go get one. So I did. And sure enough, I was out October 1st, 2004.
And so you stepped on a plane.
Uh-huh.
Just, okay, I'm going to Germany to write music. That's it.
That was it. That's all I knew. That was all I knew. I was lucky. It was a point in my life where not much was going for me. I was delivering pizza.
Yeah.
And I was kind
of... How did your family react to it? Like, okay, guys, I'm going to Germany. See you later.
They knew I was kind of I was always kind of, not a black sheep, but I was always the one, the stray arrow. You know, my father's an accountant, my brother's an accountant, everybody, and my other brother sells electrical supplies.
Yeah.
Everyone works fairly normal corporate jobs. I was always the head in the clouds lunatic running around with big baggy cargo pants, skateboarding. And yeah. So, and then went to art school and drew naked people for 2.5 years. This is just what I did. So.
Sounds fair enough.
It was all right.
So you went to Germany, you did some tracks with Beam. That was 2005.
Yeah.
And also in 2005, you did an EP on Afterglow, which was an absolute fantastic label. I think it's still there, run by Aleph.
Yeah.
You made a track, the Mirella EP.
Of course,
which is not, of course, not a coincidence, the name, because
Yeah, my wife's name.
Yeah.
And I started that track. I started the melody the weekend after we had met and she had gone back to Switzerland.
Yeah.
I was so inspired by her. That was it. Sat down to write this melody.
What did she think that you just met and you already made an EP for her?
She probably thought I was a lunatic. I'm surprised she let me move in with her just 10 months later. No, actually, let's see. We met in February. We moved in together in August. So
you were like, okay, here's an EP 5 months based later. On you as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But we were getting along so good. Like when we met during the Fastnacht weekend in Germany. So it's not really a good time to meet somebody for a lasting relationship, but somehow.
What's a Fastnacht?
Fastnacht is
Halloween.
Like a Halloween. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm blanking out right now with the other word for it in German, but it's essentially Halloween. It's like Mardi Gras.
Okay.
Without the boobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plenty of costumes, all that stuff.
It's carnival, basically. Or,
that's the word I'm looking for. Carnival, yeah. Yes. Okay, yeah. Thank you. So yeah, we had met on that weekend. Then she had to go home and it was like, oh, heartbroken. Am I ever going to see you again? Like, we're hoping so. And sure enough, we saw each other every 3 or 4 weeks. And yeah. And then eventually, you know, as luck would have it, I had been starting to talk to a studio based out of Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And she was Swiss. And eventually the studio had made a comment to me like, oh, we wish we had you here with us. I'm like,
you're like, okay, stars align.
Yeah, I said, well, things are not going for me correctly here in Germany with this studio. So I said, how bad do you want me? How real is this? And I called Morella and I said,
can I move in?
You got a little extra room in the apartment because I have an opportunity to go to Switzerland and work there. She said, call you back in 30 minutes. I'm not really sure. And
she never called back. No,
she called back. She didn't come. So yeah, 2 days later, I was out.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And was it after that we started making music that I remember the label Inspired that you had Reload on there? This was before Lift. We'll get to that in just a little bit. In that period of time, I remember this very well because, like I said, I was a very active user on Trends.nu and Trendsetic as well. People know you, especially from that time and age, that you were just remaking everything.
Yeah.
There wasn't a classic Untouched by Sean Tyus.
It was just fun. You know, once you find your way around, like you can't really go to like the nonstop 2K website to get your midis. You got to go make them yourself. They're never right. But you know, with trance, you didn't usually have to source vocals.
Yeah.
So it was very easy. You didn't have to ask anybody's permission to get your hands on the stems because you just go remake the melody yourself. That's what made making your own versions of everything really simple, or reworks where you just basically low cut the original and sidechain the original and write all your new stuff on top of that. And it becomes part of a staple of your DJ set. Most of the time, I never even had any intention of releasing it. It was to give my DJ sets character.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Just to remake and make it something special for your sets. Basically what everybody's doing right now as well.
Yeah, it's great. And yeah. I think that's what everybody needs to do to give more character to their sets rather than play what they're given. And of course, you know, the original artists are never too thrilled about that sometimes, but this is how it rolls.
I remember it's like another Sean Tyus remake. Another. I remember people talking about that the whole time.
This set tonight was no different either.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, All right. Now, a pivotal point in your career, I guess, has to be 2006. Your first release on Discover?
It was the first one on Discover, yeah.
Lift,
yeah.
Until this day, one of the biggest trance tracks ever created.
Crazy.
100%. Do you still remember working on that tune?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yep. I made it on, I didn't even have studio monitors yet. I made it on JBL PC speakers. I had just moved to Switzerland.
Yeah.
So it was done in the first couple of weeks.
Okay, so this was one of the first products when you moved to Switzerland.
For one of the first things I had done when I sit down to do it. And it was on old PC running Logic 5.5.1. For those of you new to Logic, yes, it used to run on the PC.
Yeah.
It used to run on Windows before Apple bought the company. But yeah, the track came together pretty quick. A couple of back and forth with John Askew, but overall, he loved it. It was actually originally named Flow, little known fact, but he wanted to change the name to Lift. He said it's because it's got that momentum upward. So yeah. I said, okay, cool, we'll do that.
And there was also another track on Discover called Flow by Gate 42.
Maybe that's why he forced the title change.
That's very possible also. Yeah. I remember Patrick Bjorkman made that track as well.
Because I think that came out before Lift did, so that would make sense, yeah.
A little side note, since I recently bought Lift on vinyl, I'm a big vinyl collector, and I paid 100 euros for that vinyl.
That's amazing.
Think about, did you ever expect that a tune that at that moment would be released that someone would pay 100 euros for that few years later.
No. It's my good friend Enigma State. He presses his own vinyls through the Bandcamp system.
Yeah.
He's shocked at how much some people pay for the vinyls. It's a really impressive side kind of world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's very much a nostalgia thing as well.
Absolutely.
Because you have so much memories with that piece of music that you want to have more than just a stream on Spotify.
Kind of is cool to hold your vinyl when it's pressed and like feel it, whether it's normal black vinyl or if it's see-through, like you saw the Bloodhound Gang, the one I
showed. Yeah.
Like, it was always nice to be sent a couple of promo copies of your new track. And yeah, but now that feeling is a thing of the past, unless you're going to press it yourself.
So you have one of the, this one you have yourself, right? Lift, you have it framed, you told me, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So how can you talk about a career before Lift and after Lift?
Yeah. Okay. Lift also happened on the same year that the Sander van Doorn and Doorn Recordings. No, was it Doorn Recordings? Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
No, it was actually pre-Doorn.
Oh, Oxygen. It was the reset. Oxygen. Yeah.
So that and winning the Sander van Doorn remix contest happened within months of each other.
Yeah.
And that combination was a really, really potent thing. And then that year's, God's Kitchen Summer Sound System, God's Kitchen Global Gathering, Gatecrasher Summer Sound System, Cream, all these festivals. I was watching videos on YouTube because I wasn't there. I wasn't really touring yet, of Lift being dropped by every main DJ on the main stage. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God. And by the way, this is when Trance was on the main stage.
Yeah.
And like full. And so it was like so cool. I'm like, wow, God, why didn't I go? I had no idea it was going to blow up like this. So then that just led to eventually being contacted by an agent, being contacted by more labels such as Armada for remixes and start to get the ball rolling on releasing on State of Trance when we did One More Night Out as the first way, and then eventually Soul. There's plenty of releases I think we've done. Of course, you know, remixing is always my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
I like it more than making originals because you're less attached, you're less married to the material. So you get a little bit braver with the material.
And the year after you released Lift, Drop came along as well, which is also a massive track.
Yeah,
and what I remember very well was one of the first remixes you actually did for Armada and for State of Trance was your remix for Bisson Exhale.
Dude, yeah. My father plays that in the car for himself in Florida every day.
Really?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, it's really cool track. Definitely, I really liked remixing that. It had a nice, I listen back to it and I'm like, oh shit.
That's fine. You can converse.
I had a really good flow to it. Even that old. So I'm pretty proud of the old stuff for the most part.
Yeah, if you listen to this and you don't know it, make sure to check it. Bisson Exhale, the remix. Let's go a little bit faster through this because there's so much to talk about. In 2009, we're going to go... No, 2009 started with Melbourne, but also remixing Armin.
Yeah.
Going Wrong. Which was an absolute massive hit here in Europe. And Armin wants you to remix it as well.
That was a really fun remix to do. I always loved the vocal on that, the way it dropped. And of course, it was intimidating because the other remixer was, I believe, Alex Morf.
Yeah.
Maybe even one more. And it was like just to kind of find the sound that no one else was doing. So I just kind of straight up kind of hard rocky kind of drop.
How was the remix set up? Was it also a bootleg or did Armada approach you to do it?
Couldn't really do bootlegs back then. We didn't have an AI stemming back then. So you had to it was not a rework. I was given the parts. Mm-hmm. Somehow I managed to finagle the parts and get them in my possession. And then I just went and to do it. The process took a while because I think that track had remixes that were released in waves that were months spread out. So it was fine. It was just, I had an exclusive track in my sets for a long time. So it was fine.
That helps a lot.
Yeah.
And also 2009 was the start of your collaborations with Simon Patterson.
Uh-huh.
Something's Up for the most part. How did that come about?
We were always friends. I mean, we met on New Year's Day one year at one of the New Year's Day events in the UK somewhere. I don't remember where. And we hit it off. It was always, always good times. We had a great time back in the mid, what was it? Late 2000s, I guess, into that 2000, early 2010s. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know.
I remember I don't know if I should tell this, but I remember that you guys were, was it a back-to-back set in Government that you played for us at the State of Trance? I remember Daphne, she used to work for all the events and she was traveling along.
Yeah.
And she was contacting me the whole time. Have you seen Sean or Simon? I can't find them. They're not picking up their phones need to go to the venue.
We were like puppies. If we weren't leashed up somewhere, we were just going to vanish on you. And that was exactly what
just disappear.
We were just all over the place. Yeah. It's really funny.
Oh, actually I have to jump back also a little bit in time because one thing that I have to mention is, I think one of the first, I'm not sure if we met before or after already, was 2007 when I just started working for State of Trance.
Yeah.
You played at the State of Trance in Den Bosch for 300. Episode 300.
Yeah.
At the Petalaarse Schans, the little island with the big tent.
Unbelievable.
Do you still remember that, playing that event?
Of course.
Yeah.
It was
our first major major party that we did.
Yeah. We were talking about that yesterday.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And it was a free party.
It was for free. Yeah.
Wild. And yeah, you guys did way more people than you ever, ever expected.
Yeah,
right. And Ali and Fila were the opening DJs, just to put things in context and how long ago this was. And I was right after Fadi, I believe. And the weather was perfect that day. But I think the tent was not originally planned, right? It was like a comment that came as an afterthought to prepare for possible rain.
In case it would be raining. And it was a free party. And
to do that for a free party is very generous. Yeah.
And I remember episode 250 was in the Asta. It was a small club in The Hague. And then you had episode 300, which was an experiment. Like, can we see if maybe 1,000 people would come or 2,000 people would come? And it was a free party in Den Bosch. And the lineup, I think, was Marcus Schultz, Menno de Jong, Marcus Schuster, I think, as well.
I think so.
You were there. Marcel Woods was playing, I think, as well.
I believe.
I think 4,000 or 5,000 people showed up, even more.
By the way, one stage, yeah.
I think I'm not even sure how many people there were. It could be even 10,000, to be honest.
It was massive.
It was massive. And 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, for State of Trance, we had a panel with Alan Hardenberg, which is the director and CEO of Alda. They put it together, that party. And he was telling us that they were expecting maybe 1,000 people. So they were doing a catering themselves. So the drinks and stuff like that. Everything was gone within half an hour or something, because they thought maybe we need 100 sandwiches. Yeah. You know, people might eat something. I don't know. We'll see. And everything was gone. So it was such a mess, the party.
It's incredible.
And the radio studio was also in the back. And I remember meeting Fadi for the first time as well. I think we already met before that because of some parties in the Netherlands that you were spinning already. But that was such a monumental moment that we realized, like, a State of Trance is actually pulling so many people.
Yeah, that's a really good eye-opening experience, especially for Alda when they're realizing what they have in their hands.
Yeah.
And then what it just grew every year.
Yeah. Yeah, good times, good times. Some more State of Trance releases came in 2011. You did some remixes. Also Dash Berlin, Suburban Trains, Four Strings Daytime.
Yeah.
More classics reworked.
Yeah. It's always been my kind of thing. I always treat classics with a real level of delicacy.
Yeah.
And I try not to ruin the reason I fell in love with the track and try to highlight that reason in my remixes. And that's kind of why they go over well with people, and they work still in my sets to this day.
Yeah.
So
timeless tunes as well.
Yeah, that's
Released
to pick them
tracks on A State of Trance solo, Banshee, which was with the W&W remix.
Yeah, true.
And you started your Siat Neis alias on Spinning.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get to that a little bit. Yeah. Because 2012 was kind of another pivotal moment in your career. Because when you listen to your music, suddenly, I remember these times. It was, people were getting a little bit fed up of the uplifting sides of things and started making the complex throw.
Right, electro stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the trans friends were calling it dubstep, like as a misnaming. And so then we started to get like kind of bipartisan with the trans community, the ones that were accepting of slower tempos and the ones that were getting even more militant towards the 140 stuff. It was like do or die level. And I was bored of a sound that was stagnating really quick because everybody just wanted the same exact sound.
Yeah.
And I'm married to not necessarily a genre, I'm married to just the sound and expansion and the sound design. And what interested me about Complextro and even the dubstep, even though I wasn't making dubstep, was the design and how you make these sounds the way they sound.
Yeah.
It's just
unique sounds.
Mind.
Yeah.
It harkened back to listening to Apotheosis, O Fortuna, when I was 10 years old and being blown away by the existence of these tones in my ears. And I'm like, this is it. This is me falling in love with the real reason I'm doing this in the first place again.
Yeah. Instead of making the same thing all over again.
Yeah.
I want to highlight NYPD, Leveled and Lacta.
Lacta,
so if you want to check out the sounds that we're talking about, make sure to check that one as well.
I recommend Lacta. Definitely a good example from that side.
That's on Ava Recordings, the label. I remember that Andy Moore was very on point with signing guys like Tritonal, like yourself.
True.
Ashley Walbridge. Every these guys were all bringing something unique to the table at that time. Yeah. So, Tritonal especially. And there was so many exciting things happening, and it was really dance floor stuff. Like, the sound design was on.
Hard hitting, big sounds. Yeah.
On 129 BPM.
Pretty much. Yeah, between 129 and 132. It was still danceable. I could pretty much pitch up what I was making at 132 to fit it into my normal set.
Yeah.
So yeah, everything was very still compatible, but the crowd was divided on this. It was a different time.
Yeah. Very different times.
Oh yeah.
You also had Norin and Rudd and Signal Runners and Ubayer. There was all the times when they...
Does Anjuna, they, as Anjuna they, was yeah. transitioning yeah. as well. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Next big point is, I guess, the first release of The Generation, your compilation, which was 2015. That was the start of your The Generation brand, right?
That was the start. I was relatively around then.
The album was 2016.
I started Degenerate Records back in 15 or 16. Yeah. And then Degeneration came out. And this was my chance. It's an artist album. You know, you don't have to make a bunch of dance floor, four to the floor ready tracks. So on that album, you have everything from...
Breakbeat.
There's a break track.
Drum and bass.
Two drum and bass tracks. Like more of a techie. I wouldn't necessarily say it's techno, but kind of a deep techno tune. Two trance tracks on the whole album, maybe three.
Yeah.
And the whole disc of remixes. It was just a fun project to do. And yeah, kind of just a demonstration of the things, different things I like to do.
Yeah.
Especially drum and bass. That's an addictive style to get into and to make. Love it. The production is just, I consider drum and bass producers to be top tier in terms of
just like hard
skill
style.
Level.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, to make hard style, a lot of people listen to hard style and think that's just noise. But you're like, you know, you should go try
the sound
to make
design
it.
On these kicks is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, go try to make it.
Yeah.
Go try to make it. You won't sound like that. That's for sure.
Yeah. You already mentioned Degenerate. The label kicked off with Matter of Time, your own release. It was 2016.
Yeah.
From that moment on, that was kind of your home. In the meantime, you also, if I look at your release planning you had, correct me if I'm wrong, you saved the more hard-hitting stuff for Degenerate or Regenerate. In the meantime, the Future Sound of Egypt was sort of your home for the vocal, big vocal tunes.
Yeah, that's true.
And then from 2018, you also joined the Seven Family.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of your path.
Yeah. At that point, it was like spreading out a bit more than I expected. Of course, John's a very intense guy. We were getting behind a concept that was seven, and it was like really exciting.
Seven artists,
awesome.
When you guys announced that, I was like, oh wow, this is smart. This
interesting,
is
yeah.
Backing up each other. And
different look, different concept. Yeah, absolutely. And then
did it work for you?
It absolutely worked great for a while. It was just hard to schedule. You know, the concept behind seven was the events could only take place when all seven people could be at the event. That was a rule. And scheduling that is tough.
It's almost impossible. Yeah.
Really tough logistically.
And also expensive for a lineup, you know,
expensive for
seven,
a promoter.
Seven,
especially when Asterix was part of it and stuff like that. It's an expensive proposition.
Yeah.
So logistically, that was always a tough thing to get past. But we managed to do it quite a few times, and it was always an amazing result.
Yeah.
Especially like playing an Over an Unconscious Festival, doing EDC Las Vegas and having our own stage for a day was pretty cool.
That was great.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that happening. It was cool.
Yeah.
So the period went by. Now we're going to like the COVID times. I hate to bring that up again because from that moment on, if you see the amount of stuff that you release, you were always releasing so much music, always. And from that moment on, it kind of slowed down.
It definitely slowed down for me. In my defense, not as much as it could have.
Yeah,
I could have just stopped and said, I'm waiting until the clubs come back open. I'm not going to release anything. But I still wanted to make music.
Yeah.
And you know what? A couple of months into COVID lockdown time, I started to Twitch.
Yeah.
And then there was a reason to make new tunes again.
And
you were a big help and inspiration for me getting started with Twitch and being able to reach out to fans during this very dark time. And as a result, you already know, you expand your user base pretty good with Twitch.
Yeah.
And you stay in contact and weekly touch with people. I do need to Twitch some more again.
Yeah. You definitely need to do that. There's some questions about that as well.
Okay.
So now we are in 2024. The releases are picking up again a little bit. But you also are trying to branch out a little bit as well because you have Abstract.
Yeah.
Like hard-hitting techno stuff.
Yeah.
that is released on Regenerate.
Well, now at this point, I'm going to see. Yeah, now I want to see where else it wants to go.
Yeah. What else is going to happen now in music wise?
I'm expanding in both directions BPM wise. So there will be. Yeah, I mean, there were still two tracks I couldn't even get to today, which I'll just let be a secret for a bit.
Yeah.
But going slower because I don't listen to 140 stuff in my free time. I'm listening to stuff that sounds, to my ears, new and exciting. I'm not saying it's better or worse, to be very clear here, but what I'm saying is it's new to me.
Yeah.
So my ears and my brain find it more interesting. So I've been listening to a lot of progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm... infatuated with the production differences and the amount of space in the mixes and the fact that you can make a fatter sounding track with 30 channels than you can do with 150 in a 140 because of,
there's more space.
Because reasons, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been an enlightening experience.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of the reasons why you're here today is that you sent me some stuff, including, I was preparing for my set for State of Trance in Rotterdam and you sent me you were asking me, hey, can I remix something for you?
Yeah, I wanted to practice.
Yeah, it was so because I want to practice. Person. Yeah, I want to practice my progressive skills.
Mm-hmm.
Then I sent you the was it a tune or the parts? I'm not sure. Maybe both of the tune I made with Dion Darfey.
Yeah,
which is one of the tunes that for me is still laying in my studio for 2-3 years already because I created in the lockdown period and I was waiting for it to be released. So now it's the right time to start releasing it, I guess.
Yeah.
And you sent me back a remix. This is already last year.
So it was a very different remix then, yeah.
And now you made a total different remix out of nowhere.
I think there's a couple of things that were still in the original mix, but not much.
No.
Yeah.
And then you sent me the second version and the first one was more progressive, but this was like, yes, hard-hitting progressive.
Ready, yeah.
Dance floor stuff.
Yeah.
And I heard it straight away. And I think if people were there during State of Trance, during my set, if you hear it on the show, then you'll recognize that.
Recognize it, yeah.
I've been playing it in every set since you sent it. And also, another track that you reworked was Lift.
Yeah.
And when you sent me that, I was like, holy shit, this is perfect for State of Trance. It's going to be people that know the melody and...
I don't even know if we're going to call it Lift at this point. Like maybe it just deserves another
Relift.
Name. Relift or Lifted. Or
Flow.
Oh, no, but I released the drum and bass track as Flow, so I can't do it.
Okay.
Oh no, I called that Free Flow because that was that was a gratis giveaway. So maybe I could call it Flow.
Yeah.
A lot of Flow.
So now we had this discussion also because I found this very interesting because you were like, okay, we need to start another alias for all of this, but... Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this, and I wonder if you're agreeing, maybe you can let us know in the comments on YouTube.
Yeah.
I think you should be able to release everything that you make under the same alias, just Shantaz.
It's a tough thing. Yeah. I get conflicting reports from labels and from agents and from other artists. And everyone says, yeah, you're going really slow. You can't have this as a Shantaz release. This should be something else. And... we had a good discussion already earlier. And
abstract, I understand it.
Abstract is so different that that needs to be there. Yeah. But Naze, as I was actually playing this set, I'm sitting there going, this is no different apart from tempo than what I normally make. It's just slower.
Same energy.
It's same energy.
Same emotions.
Still trance. There's a still full-on melody aspect to every single thing I do. And everything has got an edgy section in everything I do. It's me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. You're right.
I'm right. Thank you. Now I'm just wondering if the people that are listening are thinking the same way.
Everybody will, you say potato, I say potato.
That's very true. Because in the past you had a lot more aliases. Abstract Wall started recently, last year only.
Yep. Eddie Williams.
I remember A&Ring those tunes when, because that was one of the first, this was like the Glenn Morrison, Deadmau5.
Exactly.
Period, the offbeat.
I caught the bug for that. Exactly. Yeah.
Gestation and Absolutely. I remember when you sent those to me as well. I signed those to Pilot 6 in 2008.
Wow.
16 years ago. Think about that.
Yeah.
Logistic, of course, with only one release, one more night out.
That's true. That was because at the time we had to do an alias because there was a Shantaz tied for another year.
Ah.
Something different. It could have been Discover.
Yeah.
And that was the reason to get out of the option.
Ah, okay.
Sorry.
And actually, there's a question because this is new to me. Also, let me see where it is. Danix has a question. Another alias. Is Neodyne coming back anytime? Neodyne.
Neodyne is a great example of why we're going to stick with Sean Tyus for the slower stuff. I had gone into the Psy world with very, very much hesitation because I'm like, they're just not going to accept me.
Yeah.
And so Liquid Soul said, you can't go in with Sean Tyus. They're never going to take you. So I went with Neodyne.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine. And nobody knew who I was. I had a fake a Neodyne social media page and all that. They're quite the territorial one.
Yeah.
Bunch. I mean, yeah, Nicola, you know, Liquid Soul, he says, you know, he's shocked that he's even in a scene that accepts him as being a Swiss cat.
Yeah.
So it's a tough nut to crack unless you've been OG and brokered into it from back then. But so eventually the work with what I was doing with Liquid Soul was going so well. I said, okay, the next one we do is just going to be Sean Tyus. You know what? I'm not getting the support, the Psy guys support the Psy guys. And that's fine. This is just how the genre thing works.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just going to go with Sean
Tyus. Very inclusive, yeah.
Yeah, because I was proud of these tracks. Yeah. I wanted to play these tracks in my sets.
Yeah.
And if I'm playing as Neodyne thing, nobody even knows I did that. I'm like, just make it Sean Tyus. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Then that's what I'm going to do.
All right, some more questions. Charlie Two-Face asking him about the Crybaby story.
The Crybaby story. So she was, that was right. So we had met and... we had met on a Miami boat, and I think it was Dion Butler actually that introduced us. And she said, he had introduced me to her. She's probably my biggest fan, just to be clear here.
Yeah.
And he introduced us, and he said, "This girl here, she was crying during your set." And I just turned to her, like a fake angriness, and said, "You're such a crybaby." And then she actually had T-shirts made that says "crybaby."
Okay, okay. Amos Riot Knight wants to know: are you going to make Wet Wednesdays again? Those were your Twitch nights, Wednesdays.
Yeah. I should do it occasionally. Number one, especially, it's a good place to test out new material really quickly.
Yep.
And then if you don't want it, if you don't want it floating around, you just take away your VOD and you're done.
Yeah,
that's video on demand.
Yeah, yeah.
The playback. So it's a good it's a good time to do a quick litmus test, and then you see, and then okay, cool. Or if people complain about, maybe I don't take that with me this weekend quite yet.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, but it would never be weekly again. I don't think I can handle that. But from time to time, a pop-up stream sounds pretty good.
Yeah. But I think for streaming, consistency is the most important thing.
It is. I mean, but now we're not. I'm not after fans or not
just want to entertain people and have a good time
and test stuff.
Yeah,
test stuff, that's more it.
Okay. Vicious Code, also a guy from, great streamer on Twitch. Streamer. Any more progressive trance tunes coming, perhaps a new rework of Lift? Wow
Very appropriate. That's pretty cool with the reverb. nicely done. You could listen to the first 30 minutes of the setback.
There you go. Or listen to my ASOL set.
Yeah.
You might hear it as well.
Yeah.
Transcyclopedia wants to know, what is your favorite remix you've ever produced? Yes. Hard question.
Man. I don't know. There's so many. I really love how Waiting came out, how Time came out, my Sean Tyus remix of Time.
Mm-hmm.
I love my remix of me and Bjorn Akis and Zahi.
Oh yeah,
that's probably the recent one that I really adore playing still. All Over Again from last year, that was a biggie of Brian and Plum. God.
My favorite one that you ever made has to be a remix for Ben Gold.
Life.
Life.
Life, that was a cool one too. Really cool. Yeah.
It's nothing like the original.
No, it's just like, okay. Yeah,
I remember hearing that breakdown. It's just, that's just
There's a couple notes. Special. There's a couple notes in a row in common, and it's about it.
Well, that's a good remix, I guess.
Some remixes you change a lot, some remixes you do nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotham Tagora wants to know, what do you think is the most unique thing about trance or a state of trance fans?
I'm actually very, very appreciative of how far and wide people travel for ASOT related stuff.
Yeah.
Also to come to the studio here, to be around, just to be part of the experience of the ADE week.
Let me tell you, this is crazy, for our number one of this week's episode, there was a couple, I emailed them like a group of people, hey, do you guys want to come to the studio this week? We're recording this week.
Right.
This was Monday, recording Tuesday. These guys came in that they told me, we received your email yesterday. We're from Austin, Texas. We received your email, we booked our flights, and like a few hours later, they were on the airplane coming to Amsterdam to come just to the studio.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable.
How old were they?
Like 28, 29, something like that.
Must be nice, man. Just to be able to just do that. Yeah, but
they told us, and we were just, our minds were just blown. Like, this is incredible. This shows how amazing people are that listening to this radio show.
That says something right there. Yeah, that's
anyways, that's my side of how people are.
Super cool.
Yeah. So yeah, well, that's it really. So great. Thank you so much for answering all of these questions. I think people that have listened have a little bit more view of who Simon, Sion Thijs is. We could go into details more about you and Simon Perez, and let's not do that.
There's just plenty that coming up over the course of the next few months. You'll hear lots
more music.
Keep in mind, all the stuff that I played tonight was made mostly in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's incredible for me to work this fast. I've changed my workflow.
Yeah.
I should do like an MTV Cribs kind of thing one day and show people how my workflow
yes.
from start to finish.
Please, that would be really nice.
It's an interesting way. I used to work just in the studio. And there's like no windows. It's completely closed off. It's your room of death. If you clap, no one will hear you scream. Or if you scream, nobody will hear you scream.
Yeah,
if you clap,
yeah.
You do not reverb whatsoever. But now I go work near windows, near sunlight, on the laptop.
And really?
So, yeah, exactly. It sounds so great. Acoustics are horrible. But however, it makes you focus not on your acoustics because you know you're going to sound horrible. You just focus on the music. Just get it made. And any mistake that you have in your acoustics of your track, you could fix in an hour or two downstairs.
That's true. It's more about the creativity.
Let the creativity flow.
Yeah.
And then just take it down for the final touches. Get it, you know, tighten
very
everything
true.
Up there.
Yeah, very true.
That's it.
Well, I think we have to ask you back for another because there are so much questions I still have for you, but we ran out of time.
Same like, time massively. Next week?
Yeah, same time next week. We're going to have Sion Thijs once again here in the podcast also. Thank you so much for answering all of these questions.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to all the new music that you're bringing in. And please keep going for at least another 2.5 decades.
No doubt. Here we go.
All right.
Let's do it.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much once again for listening. Also, Sion Thijs for being here in the studio. And thank you for watching this podcast. If you have any questions for the next ones, you can drop some questions here in the comment section or keep an eye out on our Instagram because we always ask you guys over there to submit questions for the guests that are coming to the studio. All right. See you next time for a new one. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Check all previous episodes on YouTube or your favorite podcast portal.